and Moscow are already cooperating in Syria and have succeeded in saving the legitimate government of President Bashar al-Assad from the terrible plot of the terrorists to dismember an important Arab country. Now they are all set to help Damascus in the reconstruction phase along with another major world power, the People's Republic of China, which has also told outsider U.S. to stay away from Asia and stop its destabilization of the countries of the world's largest continent. As a matter of fact, the trio, that is Iran, Russia, and China, possess the political will as well as the natural resources to build a formidable bloc, along with the other independent countries, to thwart the devilish designs of the Americans. China needs plenty of fuel for its expanding industries, and both Iran and Russia are awash with hydrocarbon resources to meet its needs. As the world's top two countries, blessed with underground natural gas reserves, the three countries share the same views regarding Afghanistan, which has lately been freed from the two decades of U.S. occupation, and are resolved to ensure that Kazakhstan remains independent of Washington's meddling. Whether it is the West's incursions into Ukraine or the U.S. provocations in South China Sea and the Persian Gulf, Tehran, Moscow, and Beijing are determined to play the pivotal role for resolution of conflicts and restoration of peace and stability. The military exercises among the navies of the three countries are part of the efforts to test the prowess of their forces in the case of emergencies. This does not mean that Russo-Iranian or Sino-Iranian ties are solely military in nature. No, the purpose of the three independent powers of Asia is to safeguard the security of the region and the world. And this includes busting of the West's hold on international commercial and financial exchanges through the economic terrorism in the form of the illegal sanctions. The ties ought to be so strong that no sanctions can affect Iran, Russia, and China.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Peace in Life. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of peace in life in the Islamic lifestyle. Now, when we talk about the peace in the life of a person, basically we are talking about a family. That person can have a peace in his life when he is having a family, and this family is basically is the cause of peace in his life. Now, this family can be only with the husband and wife, and also it can be with the husband and wife and their children. And therefore, we can see that even those couples who do not have kids and they are married to each other, they do not have that kind of peace which those who have kids, who have children. And this couple who is married and they cannot have kids and they have maybe some medical issues or natural issues due to which they cannot have kids, they always desire for having a kid. Even if they adopt a child, they do have this desire in their heart that maybe we could have our own child. So this peace which comes with the child in the house and the relation between this child and his or her mother and father, this peace only comes with the formation of the family, with having kids only. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of peace in family, in the life, peace in the life. We said that this peace can come with the child, obviously, when someone can have a child, when a couple have a child, they have more peace in their life as compared to those who do not have any children and their desire for having a child in their whole life. And that's why we can see that there are many people who really refer to a doctor in order to get a child or have a child. And there are different ways which are introduced in today's science with these advancements which the science, especially the medical science, have. But obviously this peace that they're after, it comes with the child. And therefore Islam is talking about this. Islam is saying that in your Islamic lifestyle, if you want to have peace, have child. And also we have seen that, for example, if a family who have, for example, one or two boys in their family, they desire for having a girl. And on the other side, if the family only have girls in their life, they desire or they wish to have a boy as well. So basically, they want to experience both things, like having a boy and a girl in their families. And once the family has a boy and a girl, they think that the family is fulfilled and this family is complete because they have both types of kids. And the peace which they have now wasn't when they did not have either the boy or the girl. So basically, this is the family. And on top of that, the Islam says that inna khayra nisa'ikumul waludul wadud, that the best woman is the ones who can have kids, who are beneficial for you, the who are basically who have mercy, and those who are loving and can have kids. So this is the best woman, that obviously she provides you peace, she provides you love, she gives you affection, she's bringing peace in the life, and on top of that, she's able to bring children, and therefore this family is completed. This family is completed, and the peace that this family has, the other families do not experience such peace in their life. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
As an enabler of the unlawful killings and the illegal occupation of Palestine, the U.S. must end its complicity and begin holding the Israeli regime accountable for its actions, says Malak Shalabi, writer, in an article titled, "The Israeli Regime Forces Killed a Palestinian U.S. Citizen. Why is the U.S. doing nothing?" Stay tuned for more. Assad, the nephew of Omar, Abdul Mujahid Assad, describes his uncle as a very social and caring man. Omar immigrated to the U.S. in 1970s and became a small business owner in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He and his wife had 7 children and many grandchildren, nephews, and nieces. 10 years ago, Omar Assad decided to retire in the village of Jalilia in Ramallah, Palestine, where he was originally from. Assad loved family gatherings and regularly went around to check up on and visit relatives, according to his nephew. He attended a big family gathering on January 11th and was driving back around 20:30 a.m. At this time, members of the Israeli Regime Forces, or IDF, the military force that carries out the occupation of Palestine, were executing an overnight raid in Jalilia. Night raids are a common practice by IDF troops serving to intimidate Palestinians in their most vulnerable state by invading their safest places while they're sleeping. As Assad was driving home through his village, he was reportedly pulled out of his car by IDF troops who aggressively handled him, handcuffed him with plastic zip ties, gagged his mouth, blindfolded him, and forced him to lie on his stomach. The forces then dragged him for about 200 meters and beat him to death. His nephew said there were about 40 forces just watching this handcuffed elderly man, aged 80, be repeatedly hit by armed troops across his entire body. Assad suffered from a subsequent heart attack and was left to die on the ground, unconscious and handcuffed. Assad was buried with bruises across his entire body, said Assad's nephew, adding, "What kind of threat does an 80-year-old man pose to armed Israeli regime troops? He was barely able to walk, and they viciously beat him to death." Omar Assad was an American citizen, a fact that has garnered his story much more media attention than it might have otherwise received. However, this fact shouldn't matter, and in many ways, it doesn't matter. The Zionist regime exhibits a reckless disregard for Palestinian life, and its strongest ally, the United States regime, has responded apathetically to the killing of Omar Assad. On January 13th, the U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the department got in touch with Assad's family to express their condolences, and that it has also been in touch with Israel to seek clarification about this incident. Somehow, the United States managed to sidestep the beating and killing of an 80-year-old man, a standard feature of any commentary they provide on the Zionist regime's violent actions. Omar Assad's brutal killing illustrates how Palestinian Americans are unprotected by the United States, whose loyalty is to the Zionist regimes first. Meanwhile, Palestinian, American, and Muslim communities in the U.S. have recognized and organized and mobilized to demand action by the U.S. government for Assad's death. Someone who had community ties in Milwaukee, his family and the Milwaukee's Islamic community hosted an azah, or gathering, to offer condolences to the family. His daughter, Hala Ahmed, told the Washington Post, "We want a thorough investigation from the U.S. government and the U.N. because Israel can't investigate their own crimes." Ned Price had previously said they were going to reference Israeli investigations into the incident. American Palestine advocacy organizations like American Muslims for Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace, and U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights regularly ignite campaigns to lobby for condemnation or action against the killing, exile, imprisonment, and torture of Palestinians within the homeland, who may be stateless or have varied national privileges. Six Palestinians have been killed this year, 2022. Omar Assad's family deserves accountability and justice. As an enabler of these unlawful killings and the illegal occupation of Palestine, the United States regime must end its complicity and begin holding the Zionist regime accountable for its actions.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam my deen. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and other life forms. You're listening to Youth Station. I'm Zainab, and in the studio I'm joined by my amazing co-host,
Asma Ansari. I'm very glad to be here.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. It's a pleasure to have you with us. How often do you find yourself engaging in the act of self-sabotage?
Well, not many times.
I do it on a daily basis.
Daily basis? No. Sometimes I think that I'm not the faulty person. Sometimes I think that what happened is just not my fault. I know where I am, I think.
Congratulations. I'm so happy for you.
Yes.
How often do I engage in the act of self-sabotage? Almost every day. It's the little things. Yeah, sometimes it's a full-blown self-sabotage that, yes, you know, it takes me months to recover from. I actively end my own career. But sometimes it's just the little things.
So you notice every single thing and you sabotage about them.
Staying up till 3 in the morning.
Yes.
Watching YouTube. for me is an act of self-sabotage.
So that's a nice definition. Yeah. That is a self-sabotage.
It is, because I know I have to go to work or at least wake up for subuh in the morning. Yes. That's going to be really hard, you know, strenuous. If I could wake up at 5, and that will throw off my entire... The next day, I'll be sleepy and drowsy and grumpy. I won't have any appetite. I won't eat well. Yes, I'll have dark circles. I won't be able to... My brain will literally turn into pudding. You know, and that just throws the entire day off.
Yes. Throughout the day, your brain is resting, and you have to do a lot of things.
Exactly. It wants to rest, at least, but I won't let it.
But I don't call that sabotage, because what you are doing is a fruitful thing. So it's not sabotage. When you're doing fruitful things and it's productive, there is no cry over it.
Yeah, but during its own right time, not 3 a.m. where I should have been sleeping. See, it's about priority.
Yes, priority do matter, but nowadays in our lives, we do not have that very pre-planned life. Everything comes on the spot. If you go to work, you have to be there for some special hours. Then you come home, you have to do some chores. Then many things come in their way, and you can't do the things you want to do. So that's not sabotage. You don't have time, so you do it at night.
Actually, I feel like if I plan properly and I prioritize properly, because for me, sabotage is when I neglect my priorities.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's what sabotage looks like to me. That moment, I should have been doing something else, right?
Yes.
But I did something else instead. And then it led to my downfall in some way or another.
Yes,
small downfall, major downfall, whatever. If I plan my day properly and I schedule myself and the things I have to do, I can switch on YouTube and let the documentary on the Byzantine Empire, the Crusade War, or the Black Plague or whatever play while I'm washing the dishes, while I'm doing laundry, while I'm sweeping the house, while I'm vacuuming.
That's very difficult to do simultaneously.
Yeah, I'm fine with multitasking.
That's very
good. I'm absolutely fine with it. Sometimes I even find myself being able to listen to an audiobook while I'm working.
I'm a kind of a woman who cannot do multitask.
Oh, tunnel vision.
Yeah.
But then again, that specific task that you're focused on, you do it to the best.
Exactly. I can do only one thing, and that one thing I do it fully.
Perfectionist.
Yes, idealistic.
When was the last time you sabotaged yourself?
Well, the last time I sabotaged myself... I think in the way you're putting sabotage is more like...
That's not the only way to sabotage yourself. You can sabotage yourself any way you want.
It's more like being accusing yourself for something. You should have done it more properly.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? That's what I'm getting from your kind of sabotage. If that is the point, then I accuse myself many... times a day, perhaps. Yes, that happens. The last time I sabotaged myself, if we're putting it this way, is going to be
last
night.
Even closer.
Last night, because I was about to come here in the morning, and then I stayed awake, right, like what you said. I watched documentaries, and... So now I didn't get enough of a sleep.
Now you're tired.
Semi-tired, because we're getting used to this sort of lifestyle. And by time, it becomes our lifestyle.
We're bringing about unnecessary stress and tension.
I loved it when you said unnecessary stress.
Mm.
Yes.
It's really unnecessary.
We impose it to our lives.
Yes, exactly.
And that's very sad.
Yeah, it is.
Because we're going to be the one who loses things and who's going to be under the pressure.
Yeah, that's what sabotage is at the end
of
the day. And, you know, my definition of sabotage can be on different scales.
Yes.
Not doing what I should have been doing at that moment. What it can be watching YouTube at 3 a.m.
Yes.
It could be taking responsibility for an action.
Yes.
That was clearly my fault, but I shifted it onto another person, and then I lost that relationship. That's one way of self-sabotage.
Yes.
Or being in a situation, being in college and not studying hard enough while I know I can. Yeah, sometimes you're sick. Sometimes you've got other responsibilities.
There are many justifications.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you have to work part-time jobs to support yourself or even your family. All that stuff comes up. And in that situation, no one expects you to be a straight-A student. And if you are, you're really doing something extraordinary.
Exactly.
Right? But sometimes I'm in college, and instead of, you know, spending most days and nights studying and grinding and powering through, I'm chilling with my friends. You know, I'm going out to gatherings and parties and theaters and this and that. That's self-sabotage.
Exactly.
These 4 years are never going to come back.
Yes.
And if you don't seize the moment and make the best of it, well, you obviously can. If you neglect your priorities at that moment.
Yes.
You've ruined your future, yo. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I get it, totally.
Or when you're in a relationship with your spouse, just say sorry. It's not that hard. And we don't. And
yes, it is hard.
If we have proper priorities, it's really not that hard. If my priority is...
We have to practice a lot.
Yeah, of course, obviously.
Then again, we come back to the story of nafs. That's a very difficult thing.
Yeah,
I call it dignity, though.
It's always culprit. No. There's such a fine line between arrogance and self-respect. You know?
But that's very delicate.
Yeah, but what does God want?
That's a point.
At that moment.
Now you're hitting it.
The nail on the head.
Yes.
What does God want at that moment?
Exactly.
Does God really give a rat's whisker about your pride at
How
that moment?
How is he happier?
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, you don't, and then the situation escalates, and then you end up not talking
Tensions, drama.
You end up not talking for a few hours,
yes.
even days, and that malice and grudge and anger cultivates, and then it emanates negative energy.
It grows inside of you, and you're not happy.
And then you grow apart,
yes.
and it's just, come on, you know?
A single sorry.
Just a single sorry. Just a single heartfelt sorry. Not like, I'm sorry, okay?
But I don't mean it.
Yeah, don't do that. That just makes things worse. Why would you do that? Priorities, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling myself first and foremost.
Yes, I know.
Because I'm constantly flipping around my priorities.
So your advice for sabotage is to prioritize things.
Yes, prioritize.
That's a very good point.
And don't undermine that priority. Don't neglect it. Don't mistreat it. Don't dismiss it.
Don't let things come by itself.
Yes, don't
have
let
a plan
things get
for
out,
it.
Get in the way of
yes.
you
Take
achieving.
Action.
Yeah, and taking action. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to Youth Station. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Supposedly, you've sabotaged yourself already.
Yeah.
You didn't have a choice. It just had to happen. How do you fix it?
Maybe I do that again and again until the time I understand that it's not okay anymore and I have to take an action. I think about it and I decide to solve the issue that is making me end up in the
sabotaging loop, if you may.
Sabotaging loop.
What sort of action, what sort of measures do you take? To fix that situation.
Measures. Well, I solve it within myself.
Mm-hmm. That's,
everybody
that's
has got a way of solving things. Everybody knows what is a better way, what is the best for them to soothe themselves or to solve the situations. So I think it's more of a personal thing. Everybody has got a way of living.
Coping.
Of coping with things, exactly.
Resolving issues, definitely,
yes.
For sure. Are you the kind of person that needs to talk it out with someone? Are you a venter?
I feel better when I talk to someone, but that someone is not always there.
Mm.
So you have to solve it with yourself.
Who's that someone in your life, you don't mind me asking?
My family. My brothers, maybe my mother. Yeah. Yes, and father, of course. But I don't let them worry with me.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
That's the thing.
But I have a brother who's a partner in crime always, so I tell him. He's the one who understands. So I think the best way of solving it...
Does he give you good solutions as well?
Yes. He's younger than me, but he has good... He happens to be...
Very wise.
Yes, he happens to be very wise, and he gives me good solutions.
And that's very important,
too. I confide to him always.
Yeah, because, I mean, if the Quran tells the Prophet to shawiruhum fil amr, not that Rasulullah needs anyone's opinion.
Of course.
But Allah's, like, making a point that, yeah, consulting others is good.
Yes, he's telling us, of course.
Yeah, exactly. It also depends on who you're consulting. Don't consult,
it's
like...
It's very true.
...the cucumber vendor in your neighborhood.
Yes.
If you're going to consult
someone... who knows you is going to help you better.
Yes, knows the situation, has adequate knowledge. Because yes. then again, another hadith tells us, don't talk about what you don't have enough information about.
Exactly. That's the point. The problems of modern people is that they think they have information about every single issue in this world. Mm. And everyone is right.
And we often overshare. I blame social media for this.
Yes, exactly.
We overshare everything.
We don't have to share everything with everyone.
Not at all.
Especially those who we do not know.
Keep it low-key. Keep it private.
Exactly.
Half of the problems
keep
we have
yourself.
Is because we overshare in a lot of cases.
And that makes the problem even bigger. Mm-hmm. It does not solve it. It makes it even bigger.
Yeah, it blows it out of proportion, and now everyone's involved.
And there's no control over it.
There's no control over it, exactly.
The worst part is that there's no control
because
over it.
Because it's...
Explosion.
Yes. There's no controlling where the scattered and debris pieces fly around.
And more of sabotage.
More sabotage. Loop again. Sabotage can come in many shapes and forms and sizes.
Of course.
But I think what we learn from it is that stick to our priorities and our principles.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, everything is a learning lesson.
Exactly. Yeah. Every second of life is a learning process.
Bounce back. Just bounce back. Don't dwell. You sabotage yourself, you ruin your life. Okay, bounce back.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because of you. I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker, because of you.
In the limelight.
The damage done by rampant overproduction of virgin plastics and their lifestyle is irreversible. This is a threat to human civilization and the planet's basic ability to maintain a habitable environment. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stancil, journalist. This article is published under the heading Global Plastic Pollution is a Deadly Ticking Clock, report says. Stay tuned for more. There is a deadly ticking clock counting swiftly down. So says Tom Gamage, an ocean campaigner at the Environmental Investigation Agency, EIA, a United Kingdom-based group whose new report warns that only a muscular global treaty can turn the tide against the life-threatening crisis of plastic pollution. Published recently, Connecting the Dots, Plastic Pollution and the Planetary Emergency assembles the latest scientific data to show how the unprecedented accumulation of toxic plastic particles directly undermines our health, drives biodiversity loss, exacerbates climate change, and risks generating large-scale harmful environmental changes. Released in the wake of a landmark United Nations study that documented how plastic pollution in aquatic ecosystems has skyrocketed in recent years and is projected to more than double this decade and nearly triple by 2040 if governments fail to prevent fossil fuel and petrochemical campaigns from expanding the production of single-use plastics, EIA's report seeks to inform discussions at next month's UN Environmental Assembly in Nairobi, Kenya, where member states will have a chance to commit to drastically reducing waste. If this tidal wave of pollution continues unchecked, Gamage said recently in a statement, the anticipated 646 million tons of plastics in the seas by 2040 could exceed the collective weight of all fish in the ocean. Gamage said the visible nature of plastic pollution has generated huge public concern, but the vast majority of plastic pollution impacts are invisible. According to the report, around 92% of all plastic at the ocean surface is microplastic that have either broken down from larger debris or were intentionally created that way. Our oceans truly are turning into a plastic soup. Up to 51 trillion plastic fragments exist in surface waters alone. It is now globally pervasive. Plastic is found in the deepest parts of the ocean, on the highest mountain peaks, in human organs, and on remote and uninhabited islands. Some fragments are so microscopic that we are still developing the analytical techniques needed to even detect them. Gamage added that the damage done by rampant overproduction of virgin plastics and their lifestyle is irreversible. This is a threat to human civilization and the planet's basic ability to maintain a habitable environment. From the beginning of the manufacturing process to end of life, where just 9% of plastic waste is recycled, 12% is incinerated, and 79% is thrown away. Plastics generate physical and chemical pollution that degrades ecosystems. Plastic waste is now recognized as a possible disease vector, and it plays an important role in spreading invasive species and antibiotic-resistant genes around the globe. All of this adversely affects food webs, leads to the destruction of biodiversity, and contributes to the disruption of Earth system processes that sustain life. Moreover, the toxic substances used to create plastic products consumed when humans ingest or inhale contaminated food, water, or air have been linked to cancer and other negative changes to hormonal, developmental, and reproductive systems. According to the report, the overriding evidence also suggests that these chemicals are connected to the recent sharp increase of non-communicable diseases in humans. This is recognized by calls for plastic waste to be classified as hazardous and in a consensus statement published by 33 scientists in 2020, which urged policymakers to reduce exposure to harmful chemicals present in food packaging. In addition, the fossil fuel-based production of plastic increases the emission of heat-trapping greenhouse gases, intensifying the climate emergency and jeopardizing the world's ability to limit global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The report explains in 2015 the total estimated lifestyle emissions from plastics were 1.78 billion tons of carbon dioxide equivalent CO2e. For context, if the whole plastics life cycle were a country, it would be the fifth largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the world. By 2050, the life cycle emissions of plastic are predicted to be 6.5 GT CO2e per year, culminatively taking up 15% of the entire remaining carbon budget. Another new study by researchers at the Stockholm Resilience Center found that chemical pollution on Earth has crossed a planetary boundary, with the worldwide boom in plastic production contributing significantly to the problem. As EIA put it, plastic pollution poses a direct threat to the very limits of what our planet can manage. On top of the indirectly driving humanity closer to the planetary boundaries for climate change and biodiversity loss, the report states, it is clear that the rapid accumulation of plastic, not just in the ocean, but in all environments, poses a direct threat to planetary boundaries. If a disruptive effect to the Earth system is not already happening, then it soon will without decisive action. Despite being the world's biggest per capita plastic polluters, the United States and the UK have so far refused to join an international treaty to curb the amount of plastic waste destined for landfills and habitats, though both countries are reportedly now open to the idea.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality, youth, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, culture, politics, all produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Enmity of arrogant powers towards Iran originates from Leather's anti-arrogance and colonialist spirit. This is the part of a televised speech delivered on January 9, 2022, by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the anniversary of an uprising by the people of Qom on January 9, 1978.
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. All praises due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and upon his pure household, and may God curse all their enemies. Greetings be upon you, my lady, the infallible Fatima, who is the daughter of Musa ibn Ja'far, and may God's mercy and blessings be upon you. Meeting with the dear, courageous people of Qom has always been a valuable opportunity for this humble person. It is 2 years now that I have been deprived of meeting with you in person. Today is an opportunity to be reunited with those who are present, and I send my greetings in regards to all the people of Qom. My talk today is about the important historic tragedy that took place on January 9th, 1978. The memory of historic events that have a deep meaning behind them and which convey important messages to future generations should be kept alive. We should hold discussions about such events. We mustn't let the dust of oblivion settle on these great events. The January 9th tragedy is one such event.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Of course, when we discuss the January 9th tragedy, we should understand that event and the chain of events that occurred afterwards. Because that event led to a chain of events that resulted in the victory of the revolution in the end. Therefore, we are not merely studying an incident which was confined to 1 or 2 days. Rather, we are looking at an event that gave birth to a great movement and is a sign of depth of the people's religious beliefs. We wish to stress and highlight this point because it is one of the clear realities of the revolution. But the propaganda of those who continue to nurture a grudge in their hearts against the revolution could gradually cause these realities of the revolution to be doubted. I wish to stress that the event of January 9th in Qom and also the following events are an indication of the depth of religious belief in the people.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
There's no end in sight to the Saudi-led aggression against Yemen. Riyadh and its allies commit yet another inhumane crime amid the deafening silence of the United Nations and other international bodies and so-called advocates of human rights. Saudi warplanes bombarded the western city of Hodeidah and a detention center in the northern city of Sa'dah within hours. Dozens of people, including children, were reportedly killed in Sa'dah alone. The overnight strike on Hodeidah also left several casualties, most of them children. The strikes triggered a nationwide internet blackout in the country. The Norwegian ambassador to the United Nations, whose country holds the presidency of the UN Security Council for January, has reacted to the strikes.
New attack or series of attacks is at least 60 dead, maybe as many as 100. I mean, that can't be acceptable, can it?
No, I mean, it's not acceptable, and we absolutely call for restraints on all sides.
On Friday, thousands of Yemenis staged a rally in Sana'a to denounce the latest deadly airstrikes. The protesters condemned the United States for arming and backing Riyadh and its allies in the war on Yemen. The coalition has stepped up airstrikes against Yemen in recent weeks, killing dozens of civilians, including children.
Now we have become afraid day and night and in the morning. You don't know when the strikes will happen. The homes of citizens are now military targets, and this is what we fear. You fear that you will take children to school or to the hospitals or something like that, and you will get hit.
The spike in Saudi-led aggression follows Yemen's successful operation deep inside the UAE in retaliation for its role in the Saudi-led onslaught. During the operation, several sensitive locations in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, such as airports and oil refineries, were targeted with drones and ballistic missiles. Saudi Arabia and its allies, including the UAE, launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015 in an attempt to reinstate a friendly regime there. The kingdom has also maintained a blockade on Yemen ever since it began the war, while the impoverished country is in dire need of basic supplies such as food and medicine. Years of bombing and blockade have left hundreds of thousands of Yemenis dead and displaced millions of them. The impoverished country is experiencing what the UN has described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Twice a week, help is sent out by the truckload. Donations made to this charity in West London on their way to families hit hard by the rising cost of living. For other charities, it's an everyday job. Nearly 2.5 million people used a food bank in the UK last year. With inflation now the highest in three decades, charities are warning it's only exacerbating an already dire situation.
The striking thing is how fast prices are rising. Bread up by more than 4%, margarine 27%, eggs more than 5%, and apples up by a fifth. The same with other staples. Put them all together, and you're talking about a sharp rise in the cost of living.
And that's just food. There have also been rises in the cost of transportation, clothing, and energy. Utility bills are expected to go up by 50% in spring, affecting some more than others.
You'll notice it, but it won't affect you too much. The poorest will be most affected by this. Those with the narrowest shoulders are taking the worst of the burden, which we need to reverse to try and make sure it's those with the broadest shoulders to take most of the weight.
Economists say the UK is facing a perfect storm of COVID, Brexit, and global supply shortages. The question now is whether the government's proposed ways of mitigating the pressure on the people are enough.
The good news is, so far, the capitalism has started to grow again. It's actually building back up. But they haven't addressed the issue of fairness, and over the next few months, this is going to be particularly painful in Britain. The cost of power, potentially doubling in the next few months, will mean that some people will go into fuel poverty almost certainly.
These are just snapshots from across the country of a resurgence of poverty. And it looks like for many in the UK, things are going to get worse before they might get better. Saeed Purza, London.
Protesters outside the Israeli embassy have called for a boycott of Israel and those who support it, the delegitimization of the Zionist regime by Britain, which gave birth to it, and an end to apartheid.
We see you! We know your complicity, and we won't let you enable the ruthless and barbaric actions of the Israeli state in our name.
Israel is finding it more and more difficult to prevent the global community from knowing what's going on in the occupied territories. No amount of algorithms can stifle the cry for justice, and more people are standing in solidarity with the Palestinians.
For decades, Israel has been chipping away at Palestinian neighborhoods in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Now it's set its sights on Sheikh Jarrah. In May 2021, this neighborhood became an international focal point, with residents resisting expulsion using digital activism. The diaspora was galvanized, 180,000 people took to London streets, and the land grab was postponed as a result. Londoners say the videoing of atrocities is working, but the Israeli lobby is strong.
Mona Al-Kurd, who is from Sheikh Jarrah, as she was transmitting the demolition of the garden center of the Salha family, her Instagram was blocked. So as far as we can, the Palestinians and supporters try and portray to the world what is happening there. What we need to do is to find ways of turning that into a change in government policy.
The message is getting out. I'm of an age where I went first to Israel in the 60s, shortly after the Seven-Day War. People in this country did not know about Palestine. There was no understanding of the Nakba. There was no understanding of the expulsion of Palestinians. And for years and years, the Israeli government was allowed to continue, and this ignorance was perpetuated by the media.
Racism is a hot topic in the Western world, with people rising up against all forms of discrimination and inequality. And for many, Israel is synonymous with racism.
I think there are still organizations like the BBC which do not report what is going on the ground. Therefore, tools like social media are really, really important.
They're not going to get away with it. And as Martin Luther King said, the arc of history may be long, but it bends towards justice. We will win this fight, because justice will win.
Demolitions have begun, some in the dead of night. Stun grenades were used, the power cut, and dozens arrested. The ethnic cleansing continues, as does the fight to end the last apartheid on Earth. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Russia's guided missile cruiser Varyag and its anti-submarine destroyer, the Admiral Tributes, paraded along Iranian and Chinese warships in Iran's southern territorial waters as the last phase of a joint naval maneuver codenamed Maritime Security Belt. Conducted over 17,000 square kilometer area in north of the Indian Ocean, the one-day drill engaged some of the latest naval equipment of the three participating countries.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy, together with the navies of the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China, staged a joint drill with the motto of Together for Peace and Security. The ultimate goal of the exercises is to enhance the readiness of the three countries in confronting marine threats that are posed to civilian seafaring.
China's Urumqi destroyer and Iran's domestically built Dena and Jamaran destroyers were among the vessels that were deployed to the drills. The trilateral maneuvers saw the three navies practicing anti-piracy operations, where they freed two commercial ships from pirates. Iran's Navy says the drill will significantly boost the three countries' coordination and synergy in combating piracy and ensuring the safety of international shipping in the strategic Indo-Pacific region.
North of the Indian Ocean is of a special significance in terms of global trade. That's why it is associated with constant threats such as terrorism and piracy. Therefore, closer cooperation between the actors in this region promises safer maritime trade for all countries.
North of the Indian Ocean hosts more than half of the world's maritime oil trade, which pass through three strategic straits of Hormuz, Bab al-Mandeb, and Malacca, together forming what's known as the Golden Triangle of international trade. It's the third time Iran, China, and Russia are holding a joint drill in this body of water, with the aim to turn the thruway into a safe transit route for all passing ships. Iran, Russia, and China wrapped up their joint military exercises with strong messages. On top of them is their growing naval cooperation to ensure a collective security in the Persian Gulf, the Sea of Oman, and north of the Indian Ocean. This as they advised Western actors in the region to avoid destabilizing activities.
Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drills.
Iran warns that Israel is exploiting the United Nations mechanisms and other international bodies to cover up its daily crimes against Palestinians. In a statement, Iran's foreign ministry stressed the regime has always tried to use the victims of crimes in the Second World War to justify atrocities against Palestinians. Ministry said the regime has subjected Palestinians to all sorts of violations